Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to this Thursday's edition of Africa Link, coming to you live from Bonn, Germany, with me, Abubakar Jallo. And coming up... Whoa. Security forces in Gabon clash with opposition protesters after President Ali Bongo was declared winner of the election. Opposition leader Jiang Ping says police stormed his party's headquarters, killing two of his supporters and wounding several. Oil-rich Nigeria slumps into a recession after its economy declined for two consecutive quarters. And also traders in Zimbabwe are asking for more protection as demonstrations gain momentum in the country.
Direct loss due to the destructions and the vandalism is actually amounting to hundreds of thousands of US dollars. This is not the Zimbabwe that we want.
Hope you'll stick around for these stories in the next 25 minutes.
Top story.
Two people were killed and more than a dozen injured in Gabon this morning as security forces stormed the headquarters of the opposition party, party leader Jiang Ping told the news agency AFP. Whoa. That was the scene on Wednesday evening at the National Assembly, which was set ablaze by angry protesters after President Ali Bongo was declared winner of the poll. Now, Oletangin Jr. compiled this report.
The results were announced by the spokesperson of the Gabon Ministry of Communication and Government, Alain Claude Nze.
Au total, concernant le Gabon et l'étranger, inscrit.
The total number of votes in Gabon and abroad, 356,890. Participation rate, 59.4%. Ali Bongo Ondimba, PDG, received 177,722 votes, or 49.8%. Jean Ping, UFC, received 172,128 votes, or 48.2%. Winner, Ali Bongo Ondimba. Thank you.
Bongo Ondimba Ali, avec 177,722 voix, soit 49,80%. Je vous remercie.
Bongo had won by just 5,594 votes. Soon after the announcement, several hundred anti-government protesters shouting, "Ali must go," tried to storm the offices of the Electoral Commission in Libreville, but were met by tear gas and stun grenades. EU observers had announced shortly after the polls closed on Saturday that the election lacked, quote, transparency. The French ruling Socialist Party also released a statement criticizing the elections. Government spokesman Nze responded by accusing the French government of meddling in Gabon's internal affairs. Gabon is a former French colony and has been independent for over 50 years.
Gabon is a sovereign state which has relations with other states throughout the world, a privileged relation with the French state for decades. And that from this standpoint, the French Socialist Party is well advised to respect Gabon's sovereignty.
Ping and his supporters have vowed to fight the results. According to Gabon election law, the candidate who wins the most number of votes wins. No absolute majority is needed.
Ole Tangin Jr. reporting. And now for more analysis on the outcome of the election, my colleague Isaac Mugabe spoke to Kamisa Kamara, who is a senior program officer for Western Central Africa at the National Endowment for Democracy in the United States. He started by asking her which lessons can be drawn from the recent elections in Gabon.
First of all, the margin by which Ali Bongo won is the smallest ever in Gabon's history, which might signal that the Bongo dynasty is losing ground more and more. The second lesson that we can learn from these elections is that even though most Gabon observers were certain about the election outcome, meaning that Bongo would win the election, I think that not many of us expected that Ping would have scored such a high score. you know. So it looks like Ali Bongo is so elected for a second term. But as you recall, in 2009, when he was elected, protests and Gabonese were actually questioning whether he had won the elections back in 2009. And I feel like 2016 is definitely a repeat of what happened in 2009.
And what does it tell us about Jinping's popularity at the moment compared to Bongo, whose family has been in power for the last 40 years?
Jinping is not a new person in Gabonese politics. He has very strong ties with the Bongo family. He was married to Ali Bongo's sister. He has two kids with Ali Bongo's sister. He has worked with Ali Bongo's father for many years. He was Minister of Foreign Affairs of Ali Bongo's father. So Jinping is not new in the system. So it's not so much that he is very popular in Gabon, but it's that Ali Bongo or the Bongo dynasty is not as strong as it was 10 years or 20 years ago.
With such historical family ties with the Bongo family, and of course the smallest margin that you've mentioned in Gabon's history, can the two men work together for the sake of uniting the country?
I think that would be the best case scenario, really. Jinping would be too old to compete in the next elections if they take place in 7 years. So I think the best case scenario would be for Jinping to work hand in hand with Ali Bongo to make sure that the Gabonese people get the best out of their government.
Do you think majority Gabonese are fed up of the Bongo dynasty and really want change?
I think they are. I think they're done. I think they want something new. And you know, on the African continent, there is this, I would say, revival of democracy. Abdoulaye Wade of Senegal did not get reelected when he stood for a third term. Blaise Compaoré of Burkina Faso was ousted by popular protest. So I think that there is definitely this want for something new, and the Gabonese are no exception to that rule. One thing that I wanted to add is that Ali Bongo's re-election is maybe not a positive signal for other Central African states, notably the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the Central African countries are not doing so well in terms of regular democratic renewal at the head of the country. So, what is happening in Gabon is maybe not such a good signal.
Kamisa Kamara, Senior Program Officer at the National Endowment for Democracy in the U.S. And you're listening to Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo.
Africa Link. Every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Now, one of Africa's leading economies, Nigeria, has slumped into an economic recession for two consecutive quarters. Nigeria's economy shrank by 2.6% in the second quarter, followed by a 0.4% decline in the previous one. The National Bureau of Statistics blamed this on a drop in investment and oil prices, coupled with higher inflation. The Bureau also reported a slowdown across many sectors. Now, Samuel Atiku, a researcher at Budget Eat, a civic organization in Lagos, has been speaking to Isaac Mugabe about the reasons for the decline.
If we look at the structure of the Nigerian economy itself, we can say definitely the fiscal authority have direct impact in what happens. If you look at Nigeria, we have the federal government, you have the state government, you have the local government. If you look at the revenue of the federal government, as at that time, it was about 4 trillion. State and local government also spend about, within the same batch, also about 4 point something trillion. So the state begins to have big issues. Then before you know it, cascades into other things. Most of the state couldn't pay salaries. And then that transformed, and then it became a very big problem.
Has oil turned out to be more of a curse than a blessing to Nigeria? And shouldn't the government now focus on reviving other sectors like agriculture and mining?
Yes, the focus should not necessarily be oil again. Even the oil itself that they're focusing on is also contracting. But really, I think the direction should be in the manufacturing sector, where the real jobs are. And then if we look at the agricultural sector, to which degree do you think the focus of, should be? Is it to reduce food inflation? That means to increase production? Because if you look at the economy itself, the overall impact of the economy has to do with the aggregate demand. That's people buying things. So if we are just, okay, increasing production without thinking about the price component to it, then the entire economy will still suffer the massive problem we are facing.
When we talk of Nigeria being Africa's largest economy, one thinks of high standards of living for the ordinary people living there. Why then do more than 60% of Nigerians continue to live below the poverty line, especially in rural areas?
I think the first thing we have to consider is the workforce itself. We have about 103 million workforce, which is enormous. But the people actually work in about 70 million. So most of who work, most of them are subsistent farmers. They just do 2 hectares, 3 hectares, and yields are very low. So at the end of the day, the turnover that they get and the income they get, it's even below the normal benchmark, which calls the minimum wage.
Samuel Atiku, a researcher at Budget in Lagos. To Zimbabwe now, concerns have been raised over the escalation of violence at public protests. Business operators are not happy with the unrest because weekly protests often end in clashes with the police. This comes amid calls this week by pro-democracy movements for a national shutdown. They are demanding that Zimbabwe's long-term president, Robert Mugabe, step down. DW correspondent in Harare, Privilege Mushaniri, filed this report.
Wednesday 31 August had been marked as a national shutdown to pressure President Mugabe to respond to civil rights issues citizens are raising. Business in central Harare was low, but major services were operational. The national shutdown was not eagerly responded to. In an interview with DW, Simbarashe Chitagu, who operates a taxi business in central Harare, said demonstrations and protests are having negative effect on his business.
The business is very low. Normally, we work with the people in the offices, and those are the ones who normally give us business. If they call for a strike or stay away, then definitely we know that there won't be any business for us.
There is growing concern over violence that is occurring each time pro-democracy movements call for a demonstration. Zimbabwe has witnessed an increase in social unrest in the past 4 months. Zimbabwean police is accused of applying excessive force on protesters. Last Friday, a demonstration to push for electoral reforms ended with violence and destruction of property. Speaking to DW, Confederation of Zimbabwe Retailers President Denford Mutashu asked for protection of business and property.
Direct loss due to the destructions and the vandalism is actually amounting to hundreds of thousands of dollars, US dollars. And this is not what we want. This is not the Zimbabwe that we want. We want a peaceful environment, and the business thrives through a peaceful environment.
On Tuesday, the EU delegation in Zimbabwe called for the initiation of dialogue between government and citizens to address the increasing social unrest. EU ambassador to Zimbabwe, Philippe Van Dam, says all parties must condemn any form of violence in the strongest way.
We recall to all parties involved the importance of the constitutional rights and freedoms, which have to be upheld by everybody, including the police forces. And that's, I think, the red line for us is constitutionalism.
President Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF has played down the social unrest and accuses foreign embassies of sponsoring citizens to rise against government.
Privilege Mushaniri in Harare. And it's time now to join the journey to the promised land in this episode of Learning by Air. Enjoy.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome to Learning by Ear. We are on the 12th episode of this radio drama called The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. Farahani has been in a detention center for illegal migrants since he was picked up off the coast of Europe a week ago. The conditions inside are so bad that in our last episode, Farahani decided to organize a hunger strike. He and the other illegal migrants hope this will persuade the authorities to hear their cases and grant them asylum. Meanwhile, Linda, the aspiring law student, has returned to Europe after a short holiday and discovered that immigration officials have been to see her fake husband, Charles. To make matters worse, Linda's mother called to tell her that her father had been hit by a car and was in intensive care. Linda was so shocked that she fainted on the spot. Meanwhile, her fiancé, Chivasi, is trying to sneak into Europe to be with the girl he loves. He paid a human trafficker to hide him on board a cargo ship. Will Chivasi make it to the promised land? Stay tuned for today's episode, Asylum Granted, Asylum Denied. We join the story as Chivasi's ship arrives in the very same port where Farahani entered Europe.
I think we should check this ship. It's coming back from delivering aid to Africa. Bring in the sniffer dogs. Let the dogs check those empty boxes and crates over there.
Yes, boss.
The dogs have found something suspicious in those crates. Open them.
Okay.
Hey, boss, come over here.
We have some illegals here. Come out. Out you come. Slowly now. Don't be scared. We won't hurt you.
Water. Water, please. Please give me some water.
Bring some water here.
Okay.
Quickly. Then get their names and send them to the detention center.
Chivasi and the other illegal migrants are given food and water at the dock. Then they are all taken to the same detention center where our North African friend Farahani is being held while the authorities consider his application for asylum. Meanwhile, Linda has recovered from her fainting fit and is asking Florence what her mother said on the phone.
Linda, you gave me such a fright.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. My dad, how is he?
Your dad needs an operation immediately. Your mother told me I should ask you to send them money. They need it urgently for the hospital bill.
But where will I get it from? I just got back from my trip home and I spent all my money there. I have no savings left.
Oh, don't worry, I'll help you.
Really? Oh, Flo, that's wonderful. Thank you so much. I don't know how I can ever repay you.
Stop studying and come and work full-time at the club. You'll earn more money and then you can help your parents back home.
But I need to study for my degree. I wouldn't be able to do that if I work more hours.
Linda, you can always go back to your studies. But your job? Well, you never know.
Flo?
Yeah?
Can you tell Charles I won't be able to pay him this month for the marriage papers? I'll have to send more money to my parents. I just don't know what to do.
Charlie, can you come here for a minute?
Yes. What is it now?
Linda can't pay you this month.
What?
Yeah, she's going to have to send money to pay for her father's operation. But she'll pay you next month as usual. Won't you, Linda?
This is the last time I'm doing this, Florence. No more fake marriages.
What do you mean? Has Charles been married before?
Yes, he's my ex-husband. We were married for 5 years. Now we own the club where you work, and we help people like you who need papers to settle and work in Europe. You're his fifth wife so far.
What? You're not serious?
At last, Linda is beginning to understand what kind of racket she's involved in. It's sheer luck that the authorities haven't uncovered it. But how long will that last? Meanwhile, at the detention center, Chivasi is given a briefing by officials on how things work there. After which, they take him to the dorm where he'll be living for the foreseeable future. One of the men he's sharing with is Farahani.
Hello, my name is Chivasi Jawa.
Ah, that's enough.
Sorry?
One name is enough. I am Farahani. People only use one name in here.
Okay, my name is Chivasi and I'm from...
Don't ever say where you come from. That's a taboo in here. No second name and no country.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry. I didn't know about those rules.
Yeah.
Hey, isn't that the bell for lunch? How come you people are all still lying on your beds?
We are on hunger strike. We want them to hear our asylum requests. They told us today that they are going to bring in immigration officials who will listen to our stories. Then, together with the judge, they'll decide whether we qualify for asylum or not.
But I thought in Europe they give shelter, food, money, and asylum to everyone who asks. So that is not true then, eh? So, what story do you have to tell them to get asylum?
What is important is that you stick to your story. Don't tell them one thing one day and another the next. They'll either send you straight back or keep you here for a very long time. My story is that I came from a war zone in the Middle East and I escaped to Europe to find safety.
Ah, okay. Mm. But are you really from the Middle East?
That's none of your business. You work on your story. They'll be here any time from now.
Can't I tell them I'm escaping poverty and hopelessness?
We all are. But as far as I know, that's not a good enough reason for them to give you asylum. You have to say, for example, that you were being persecuted because of your religious beliefs or that there was ethnic cleansing where you come from.
But my country is peaceful. There was some trouble after the elections and there's very high unemployment. But normally we don't have any serious problems.
Then you shouldn't be here. If you have no problems, why did you risk your life to get here?
Actually, I did it for my fiancé.
Huh?
I promised I would cross the ocean to prove my love for her.
You what?
You are the one who incited the others not to eat. Come on, follow me. The immigration official is waiting. The rest of you can still go down and have lunch if you want to.
Farahani's brain is working overtime as he goes through his story in his mind over and over again. He knows that this is his only chance. It's make or break for him. Stay in Europe or be deported back to Africa. Let's listen in to his interrogation by the immigration official.
So, young man, you want to claim asylum here in my country. Can you tell me why?
I believe I will be safe here. I've been dodging bullets for most of my life, but here I can finally sleep in peace.
You've been dodging bullets?
Yes.
From whom and where?
In my country, we have had no peace for as long as I can remember. The government has been fighting armed militias and many of my family members have been killed in this conflict.
It says here that you come from the Middle East. Is that right?
Yes, that's right, sir.
You speak Arabic then?
Yes. Yes, of course. It is my mother tongue. I learned English in school, but at home with my parents, we always spoke Arabic.
Hmm. I'll ask my colleague to come and interview later. He's a Middle East expert and he speaks fluent Arabic. He'll be able to tell from your accent exactly where you come from.
Mm, no problem.
So how did you get here? To Europe, I mean, not this detention center.
We fled the Wotton country where I was born and walked for days and days until we met someone who took us to a port in North Africa. Once we got there, we paid someone else to take us across to Europe by boat. He was supposed to take us all the way. But when we got within sight of the shore, he told us to jump in and swim. I swam for hours before I was rescued by the border guards. Then I was brought here.
Well, I've made a note of your story. This was just a preliminary hearing. My colleague will come later and ask you some more detailed questions. You should be aware that if we find out that you have lied in anything you've told me so far, your asylum request will be rejected and you'll be deported back to where you came from. That's all for now. Next, please.
One by one, the migrants come in to tell their stories. Chivasi is the last to come in. How will he handle the test? Join us next time to find out. Until we meet again, bye-bye and take care.
And before we leave you, a reminder of the main stories. Security forces in Gabon have clashed with opposition protesters after President Ali Bongo was declared winner of the election. Opposition leader Jinping says police stormed his party's headquarters, killing two of his supporters and wounding several. Nigeria's economy has slumped into an economic recession for two consecutive quarters, and business operators in Zimbabwe are asking for police protection because of increasing demonstrations. If you'd like to comment on these stories, you can send us an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to AfricaLink, DW53 110 Bonn, Germany, or you can also send us a text message to country code 49160957595. And until tomorrow, my name is Abubakar Jallo, reporting from Bonn, Germany. Bye now.